TV.
I didn't want to give anybody the impression that on Saturday I was going to have any kind of surgery. Actually, I made Friday's show on Thursday. So on Friday, we went to see a surgeon. The only reason we went to see this guy was because it was a link with Sasha, the immunology guy. And so Sasha knew of a doctor, but I could tell it was like from way back when. And when we met this doctor, I'm going to tell you about it briefly. He hardly remembered Sasha. It was not a good connection. It was very poor. In fact, I didn't like that doctor at all. So, let's see, what's the first thing we did? Yeah, we saw the three girls that came up. One of them an MD, remember, they cut my throat. MD, in that case, stood for medical dabblers. I looked at them as medical dabblers. At her, she was the only MD, she was the only medical dabbler. The rest of them helped her, but they were sincere, and they took care of, you know, they set up the stage and everything, so there was no problem with infection or anything, and I thought maybe my problem was solved. They drained a lot of water out, but it wasn't. It wasn't even close. The next day, we went to another MD. I think it was the next day. Yeah, it was an older guy, a friend of my wife Maria's. A friend of hers works for this guy, an elderly guy, like 82. I call him my dad, MD. He was an MD, my dad. He was very kindly. He didn't speak much English. And he's the one that said, it's an abscess. So actually, no, he was the third doctor. Remember, the first one was the one who hated me. Yeah, so that's right. I don't have a name for him. He just hated me. Because I didn't follow the protocol that I'm supposed to. The / poison and burn protocol. You remember? That's the guy I told that I decided to build up my immune system rather than tear it down. He's the one that said this thing in the middle was a cyst. See, yeah, I shaved my beard a little bit. I shaved my beard down, so now you can see just how freaky this is on the other side here. This is the third time this has happened. It happened here right after the surgery in June. Then I got this thing, and it's a little bit reduced since people have been jumping on it. And then this now is extremely painful, like a really bad toothache. So the second doctor was the medical dabbler. Yeah, and then so I was grateful for the first one. He said it's not lymphedema, it's a cyst. I thought, well, that's good, because you can just drain cysts, get rid of them. The medical dabbler couldn't drain it, and my dad, I thought he was doing a good job, because he was getting some like white stuff out, you know. Yeah, man, that's the stuff you want. And he says it's infected. I thought, great, I'll just take some antibiotics and be done with it. And he said, this might really be done with it, you know. Well, no. Nice try, my dad. But so then, on Friday, then, we went to the Sasha connection, which was a complete bust. This doctor, MD, I call a major douchebag, because he was a major douchebag, just... We didn't know him before. He didn't know us. Just gave him a 5-minute oral history of what everything was about. He looked at it. And we said, you know, saw a doctor a couple days ago. A doctor who hated me. I didn't mention that. So he said it was a cyst, you know. And this guy, it's mostly in Spanish. Blah, 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 blah. Him and Maria are talking Spanish, which I prefer. I don't want to know what's going on. I'd rather hear it from my wife later than from douchebag straight. See what I mean? So I like the deflection. I like not knowing what's happening, what's being said. I like it. Because then when my wife tells me later, she can kind of soften it for me. Like, here's what he said. Well, and she can do it gently and nicely. So major douchebag says, "Sist, well, I don't know. He's looking at it. Oh, I don't know. You know that cancer, it's aggressive. It might be back." And like, he managed to say that in English for my benefit. And he went from saying a cyst that, yeah, you never know, you know, it could be a tumor, cancer, it comes back. I was so pissed off at that guy. Keep it to yourself. All you have is an opinion. An opinion based on 5 minutes of an interview. And he managed to get that out in English. Later, I told Maria how upset I was at that guy. I said, why would any doctor who doesn't know anything about your medical history, in spite of the fact that a doctor 4 days ago said it was a cyst, why would he even say something like that? She told me why. Because in Espanol, he had asked her if I had done the radiation and the chemo. Just like the first doctor. She said, well, no, we decided to, you know, build up our immune system with this. And that's where I thought the Sasha connection would help. There was no Sasha connection. It was complete bust. So that's why. That's why. Now he was pissed at me, just like the first guy. Just like the first guy. So now Major Douchebag just, and I swear to you, he had a smirk on his face when he talked about the possibilities. And I never want to see that guy again. And I won't see him again. That's the good news. I will never see that guy again. I refuse. Just like I don't want to see the first guy again. My dad was, I'll see him again. He was a sweet guy. Medical dabbler was nice. I wouldn't mind seeing her again, but maybe after 20 years down the road when she has some experience. But it's all of God. This has all been good in its own way. Don't ask me to explain how. It just has been. Because all things work together for good. That's how. So now, tomorrow we decided, my wife made an appointment with the original surgeon. We probably should have done that a long time ago, but he's also, why didn't you do this and this and this? I know it, because he said that to her on the phone before. What do you mean you didn't? / burn and poison. What do you mean? So, but yet he's the one most intimately involved, and he should know. He should know that this is a common reaction to. Because see, folks, I'm going to talk about this for one more minute. I hate this topic more than you can imagine, but I owe you all an explanation because, like, you're my family. When you get as many lymph nodes removed as I had, lymph nodes gather the liquid, gather fluid. When they're not there, the fluid gathers. It has no place to go, so it collects in these little cyst things. So, and then if you don't get them taken care of right away, I guess they just balloon out. So, but this one hurts like hell. But so that's the situation. Okay, I'm done with that. 10 minutes I spent on that. I'm sorry. I really am sorry. Don't believe me. I'll be more happy than you when I stop talking about this. So let's talk about subjection to the civil authorities. You know, I've been watching some videos on Shroud of Turin and the apostles, and they all died in miserable ways. I saw a video on Caiaphas, documentary on Caiaphas, like what his idiotic life was like after he condemned Christ to death. Feel sorry for him. You know, they found an ossuary, a bone box of his, Joseph Caiaphas. They actually found his freaking bones. He tried to pay off the Roman soldiers to say that the body was stolen. Paid him a tidy sum. Because the resurrection of Christ caused him big problems because he was concerned only about one thing, not the truth. No, he was concerned about his power. His power. Don't want to be that guy. Man, thank God I'm not that guy. He was a vessel of dishonor. We're vessels of honor, thank God. So, see at the great white throne, Caiaphas. He's going to be changed. He was probably one of the ones Jesus referred to when he said, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. But then again, he might have been saying that about the Romans, not Caiaphas, because they knew exactly what they were doing. Well, no, actually, they didn't. They didn't know he was a Messiah. Caiaphas was the guy who said, it's better for one man to die than the whole nation perish. Swing and a miss. So I'm watching these videos, getting more depressed, you know. Watching Shroud videos, getting more depressed. I mean, I believe the Shroud is 100% legit. It's amazing. And I realize now God is going to use it as a testimony against, at the great white throne. People say, why didn't you just leave us a picture? Why didn't you just have somebody take a picture of you? We have a picture of Jesus Christ. So nobody's going to have any excuses. God's got all his bases covered there. But it's really gloomy how these disciples died. None of them died in their sleep, put it that way. But I have good news for you along that line. The good news is that, we're not going to die. We're going to be snatched away. But we certainly are not required to, as the circumcision message requires the Jews to do. We are not required, as the Jews are required, to endure to the end in order to be saved. And we know that during the tribulation, some of the Jews will be martyred. And we know, again, all the disciples were martyred. They did it for their Lord, and it was their duty, and it was their honor, and they preached against the Roman Empire, and even when the high priest told them to shut up after Christ's resurrection, they didn't. They didn't shut up. I'm so happy for Christ that he's done with his shit. I'm so happy for him that he raised from the dead. If I were him, I would have come out of that tomb and I would have just made a beeline. And it's not far. It's right there. I believe the tomb is near the Mount of Olives. I would have gone to that rock where I sweat blood. And I would have stood there and thought, my God, just 3 days ago or 4 days ago, I was here. Unbelievable. What a difference between then and now. But believe me, folks, I can't wait to be able to say, what a difference between now and then. Then I would have gone to the scourging place where they stripped him of his clothes and beat him to within an inch of his life. I would have just wandered over there, stood there. His blood would still be on the ground there. And I would have just, like, thank God that's over. You know, it's like you kind of want to go back and realize that you're not in the same situation. I would think that he would be really happy to be on the other side of it. It was such a, I mean, I'm just feeling it now. I just, this disfigurement and this pain, and I've been dealing with this for a couple months, and I'm thinking, just to be on the other side of this, on the other side of a definite diagnosis and treatment, on the other side of treatment, whatever the treatment may be. I don't know if I'm going to need surgery. I don't know. But to be on the other side of it, and many, many of you I know suffer, and people wait for diagnoses. You know, they have tests, and they're waiting anxiously to find out. And you just want to be on the other side. And for our Lord to finally be on the other side, he walks out of that tomb. Oh, my God, he had to feel great. Don't give me any of this holy stuff like organ music. And he just walked slowly. It must have been, yeah, oh, my God, this feels good. Then he's got to feel sensitive for my friends, the disciples, knowing that now they have to go through it. So you would think, you know, that's why he couldn't abandon them. That's why he stayed there for 40 days. Couldn't abandon them, right? Stayed there and encouraged them. And now they had to go through it. And now I'm happy for all them. They're all dead, lucky bastards. They're all dead. All their suffering's over. Now they have to look forward to is, all they have to look forward to is glorification. And a lot of you are really miserable. And every day you wonder, how the hell am I going to get through this day? Family problems, health problems, financial problems, so many reasons. And then when you think, when after we're glorified, you think, oh, we're going to come back here and you're going to look at these places where you suffered. And it's going to feel great. Glory is going to feel great. Don't let anybody trick you into thinking that glory is some mystical, non-sensual thing. Oh, it's going to be sensual as hell. It's going to be so delicious. It's going to feel fantastic. Remember, the orgasm is a microcosm, a hint of permanent glory. It's a hint. So I'm just going to be like, this is fantastic. And then to be standing right next to the place where you were, like a day ago, miserable, writhing, suffering, crying, being depressed, and now to be on the other side of it, oh, it's going to be such a relief. The contrast principle will make it delicious. That's what will make it delicious, the contrast principle. So God's setting it up for me, setting it up for you, setting it up for all of us, the contrast principle. But even now when we're on earth, what I want to tell you is that we don't have to suffer like these disciples did. We're not asked to give our lives in martyrdom for Christ. In fact, it's just the opposite. We saw a hint of this with Jesus in front of Pilate when he said, "My kingdom is not of this world." And we get to Paul in Romans 13. Romans 13, 1, let every soul be subject to the superior authorities. Oh, God, I've gotten in so many arguments with people about this. And I said, well, this is just good authorities. We're only supposed to be subject if the authorities are obeying God. When the authorities turn evil, we have every right to go against them. It's just the opposite. Because this is a continuation. There's no chapter headings in the original scriptures. This is a continuation of Romans 12. The whole concept, not the whole truth of Romans 12, starting verse 17, to no one render evil for evil. To no one render evil for evil. And then verse 21, be not conquered by evil. Conquer evil with good. Let every soul be subject to the superior authorities. You see how I just ran over the chapter heading there? You see how I just went from verse 21 of 12 to verse 1 of 13. Be not conquered by evil, but conquer evil with good, colon. You see what I did? I turned the period into a colon. Colon, let every soul be subject to the superior authorities. In this context, being subject to the superior authorities is conquering evil with good. And in that context, the superior authority must be evil. The superior authority has to be evil, or this verse makes no sense. So for those people who want to say that we only have to be subject to the superior authorities when they're good. If they're evil, no, we're off the hook. No. It's the opposite. This passage makes no sense if the authorities are good. And I remind you, when Paul was writing this, Caiaphas was still the high priest. Nero was the Caesar at the time. So there were some real bad apples in Paul's day who were in charge. Let every soul be subject to the superior authorities, Paul says, nevertheless. And whoever is resisting an authority has withstood God's mandate. You may say, but Martin, in Acts chapter 5, the Sanhedrin, let's just read it. Sanhedrin told Peter and John to shut up and don't talk about this again. Now leading them, they stand them in the Sanhedrin, Peter and John. And the chief priest inquires of them, saying, do we not charge you with a charge not to be teaching in this name? And lo, you have filled Jerusalem with your teaching and are intending to bring on us the blood of this man. Well, they were blaming them for killing Christ because they did. Yet answering, Peter and the apostles say, one must yield to God rather than to men. And listen to what I found on a Christian site. On this verse, one must yield to God rather than to men. We must obey God rather than men is a foundational Christian principle. No, it's not. It's a principle of the circumcision. It's not even one now. I'll get to that. It's a foundational Christian principle declaring that divine command takes precedence over human authority. Well, divine command does take precedence over human authority, but we learn from Paul that divine command dictates human authority. God puts who he wants in authority. Romans 9, Daniel 4, 35. Nebuchadnezzar says God puts who he wants in charge. Romans 9, God sets Pharaoh, not a nice guy, not an agreeable guy, real douchebag. God puts Pharaoh in charge in Egypt. So we learn that through Paul, that the divine command doesn't, there's no discrepancy between the divine command and the human authority. Human authority, and Paul says that. This is what I mean when I say no discrepancy. Paul says again, Romans 13:1, let every soul, I'm talking funny because this hurts like a son of a bitch here, I'm sorry. My pains, pills wearing off. Let every soul be subject to the superior authorities, for there is no authority except under God. Now, there is no authority except under God, and that's an absolute no. I think there's a superscript T on top of that. If you look in your concordant version, I'm on the concordant on the computer. They don't have those markings here. There is not authority except under God. Now those which are have been set under God, so that he who is resisting an authority has withstood God's mandate. So the authority, as evil as it is, that's God's mandate. That is God's mandate. So going back to this Christian information, taking this divine command and putting it over against as though it contradicts human authority, we found out from Paul, this is high revelation, this is meat, not milk, that whatever human is in authority is the divine command. But this wasn't the case in Acts. How do you know, Martin? Paul hadn't written Romans 13 yet. Paul hadn't even been called yet. Romans 13:1 wasn't true until Romans 13:1 was written. In Acts chapter 5, when Peter says, one must yield to God rather than to men, the administration of the grace of God hadn't kicked in yet, hadn't come yet. Saul was still a raging douchebag Pharisee. Boy, I'm really into that term today. Really working well for me today. I hope nobody's offended out there. I really hate whiskey anymore. Really hard for me to drink. Let's put it that way. I mean, I do it for my boys. But now, this is Peter in Acts 5. Now I want you to hear Peter years later. This is Peter in 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 13 through 15. He says, "You may be subject to every human creation because of the Lord, whether to the king as a superior or to governors as being sent by him for vengeance on evildoers, yet for the applause of the doers of good." Oh yeah, Martin, it says vengeance on evildoers. But if we go back to Romans 13, the evil of the context is resisting the authority. Magistrates, verse 3, Romans 13, are not a fear to the good act, but to the evil act. The evil act. But the evil act of the context is those who are withstanding God's mandate. That is, those who are in subject to the superior authority. The good and evil of the context are be subject to the superior authorities or be in subject to the superior authorities. Withstand the superior authorities. Why is the Peter of 1 Peter chapter 2 different than the Peter of Acts 5? Because in the interim, Paul has come on the scene and a new administration has come. A new gospel has come. And that new gospel is the grace of God and it all is of God. I mean, all was of God before, but it's like front and center now. It's a thing. It's a thing. And it harkens back, and I think Jesus really planted a seed in front of Pilate when he said, "My kingdom is not of this world." You see, the Israelites are fighting for this world. They're fighting for control of this world. They're fighting the leaders of this world. We are not. And I think when Jesus was standing before Pilate, I really think at that 11th hour moment in our life of our Lord, I think that was the first clue we saw, the first hint of the new administration that he never talked about when he was on earth. But I think that when he says, "My kingdom is not of this world," because we know his kingdom, well, is of this earth. What he said was, "My kingdom is not of this system," and that's true. World, cosmos, system. This system that's now in place here where you're the governor and douchebag Caiaphas is the high priest. That my world's not of this system. But I see this also as he's looking toward an even better system than a regenerated earth. Is it? He perhaps hinting at least at Paul saying that we don't come in conflict with the superior authorities, which means you don't have to die a miserable death. If they tell you to shut up, you shut up. If they tell me to shut down your website sender or we're going to crucify you upside down, sorry, folks, but I'm shutting down my website and I got scriptural recourse. Now, if I was in the Acts administration, that'd be different. I have to let them crucify me upside down. I would just have to do it. I don't have any choice. Knowing myself, I go, okay, no, I can't shut down my website. Well, you know we're going to crucify you upside down. I know. Stop talking about it. Just do it. Let's get it over with. Ah, God. But I don't have to do that now. Neither do you. Oh, God, that's so great. We don't have to die for our faith now. We don't have to. Paul died for his faith. He didn't do anything wrong. They never told Paul to shut up. The Roman government protected Paul from the Jews. They were the ones telling him to shut up, the Jews, not the Romans. Caesar just got pissed at all the Christians, thought Paul was like one of them or something. Paul never did anything wrong. At no time, whenever Paul was arrested, did he do anything wrong. So, hey, we don't have to die for our faith. That makes me feel great. I think I might go get some ice cream.